Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you since 1997 on KKUP Radio with over 250 guests and still going strong in their 12th year of weekly broadcasting, the International Taz and Paula Show brings to you expansive, engaging, and groundbreaking intensity on radio and now on the internet airwaves today. Listen live every Thursday or visit Embracing Mother Earth's archives, exclusive articles, ask questions, and receive actual answers from guests anytime at TazandPaulaShow.com. Taz and Paula's special guests are experts coming from all walks of life, energizing our lives with a passion that inspires and teaches us with each of their compelling personal life journeys, with roots from ancient wisdom and bridging it with modern science. We hope today's show touches the wisdom of your heart. And now, Taz and Paula.
Hi, you're listening to the Taz and Paula Show, and we're waiting for Taz to call in and join us. So I'm going to put some music on until she comes in. Just a moment. Well, we're all together. Hi, Taz. Are you there?
I am.
Well,
I'm here.
We want our listeners to know who we are talking to today. We're talking with author Lynn Pearson and her incredible journey as a child and more. While growing up, she and her family relocated 10 times, and Lynn went to 14 different schools. The experience that most impacted Lynn was for 4 years, beginning at the age of 9, on the Caribbean island of Grenada. Her life was totally enframed in crystalline seas and magnificent appearing jungles. I've been to that island. It is very beautiful. When she and her family had returned to the United States, Lynn was 13 and had acquired enough credits to attend her first year of college. Grenada's schooling system had allowed Lynn to progress at her own speed, which to Lynn meant an opportunity to get studies behind her quickly as possible. The officials, not knowing what to do with a girl who looked like more than 11 years old, finally allowed Lynn to skip a grade to the ninth.
Lynn Pearson's career involved the study and promotion of emerging technologies and the authoring of her business publications, from software demonstration and training manuals to case studies. An award-winning sales management career followed in many presentations to Fortune 500 executives throughout a work life. Interspersed with rapid promotions, then layoffs and downsizings often typical of today's technology companies, Lynn leveraged the fortitude and high connection realized during her youth and learned to rely ever more upon her intuition or her voice from within. Lynn majored in writing and editing at North Carolina State University, and for 2 decades, her morning escapes delved into the union of science and spirituality, resulting in articles snapped up by such organizations as The Voice for Love and Shirley Chang, were published. Lynn's accumulated experiences resulted in The Great Awakening, a spiritual thriller series the press has likened to The Da Vinci Code meets A Course in Miracles. The official published date for the first volume is Rounding the Bend here on March the 29th, 2010. And welcome, Lynn. We are so glad to have you with us. You have had such a journey.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, you know what, I think Taz would agree with me where we would like to start is your, actually what, you, what you experienced in the Caribbean as a young girl.
Sure. Okay, great. Obviously, it was a very formative experience, and as you mentioned, you've been there. It's a beautiful island. But we went out there because my dad wanted to get his kids out of the country and have us exposed to more of a third world country type environment. And it was beautiful. But, you know, we lived very differently there. We cooked on a kerosene stove, and we spent a lot of times outdoors. And it really built a close connection with nature. And, of course, I have a lot of fun outdoors, too. But we did a lot of things like hiking for miles and running into six-foot-long iguanas, you know, on the side of trees and hiding from feral cows and riding horses through the surf. But
oh, wow.
One of the most fun things we did was my best friend dared me to ride this really insane donkey. So we were getting thrown all the time. I finally figured out this animal would kick its heels over its head. The only way to stay on this donkey, and I proved it could be done, was to hold on to its tail. So that was really fun. But the whole experience, as I mentioned, did really cement my strong spiritual connection and inquisitiveness. And, of course, you know, the locals there were mainly Catholic, but they also practiced an undercurrent of voodoo, which was really interesting. So they had a very unique approach to their spirituality, and it made me become more open in my spirituality, more questioning, and also very much deepen my relationship with my Maker. And as a result of that, I had three life-saving miracle-type experiences, which I could tell you about.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. One was I was actually swimming with my best friend again, and she had, I'm quite intuitive. I kind of grew up with a very strong intuitive sense, and she was daring me to swim down under the water underneath this jetty and dig our way underneath a long pipe that, put drain water out into the ocean. And she was digging in the sand and then swimming underneath that and coming up the other side. Well, I had this really bad feeling that this was not a good idea. And I kept saying, no, you know, how kids do it. I was 12 at the time, so she's daring me to do it. So finally I do it, and what happens? I get stuck. And, you know, I don't have very long before you're going to drown, and I could not get out. I could not back myself out, and I could not get out forward. So I finally just started praying, and that was the first really extreme miracle I've ever experienced. I was praying as deeply and fervently as I could, and all of a sudden, this pipe lifted up, and I felt a hand shove me out from underneath it. I mean, I was just astounded, and ever since then, I went, you know, that happened for a reason, and what a blessing for me. And it's been quite a blessing because I went, boy, God does care for us, and prayers are answered. So that was one of several that happened to me down there.
Oh.
The most extreme.
Oh, I got a chill when you're telling the story.
Yeah.
I hear those type of stories often, and you think, was it an angel that came down and helped us out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and I do constantly ask angels to help me. I believe that that's what they're here for. They're here to, and waiting for us to ask for their aid, and we don't ask enough. And, you know, I actually provide classes and work with angels and show people how to do that, and it's been quite incredible, the things that can happen, and you can actually feel their aura and start interacting with them more. But I had one other interesting experience I should tell you about. I was quite a tomboy, but I was climbing a tree that overhung the beach, and when I was doing that, I actually bumped into a yellow jacket's nest and got stung by a whole nest full of yellow jackets. So obviously I'm screaming at the top of my lungs and jump out of the tree, land on, thank goodness, on the sand, and go diving into the water, and I'm still getting stuck in the water. But my mother heard me about a half a mile away. Of course, you're going to scream loud. But she would start counting afterwards, and she stopped counting at 200 stings. So that was another fervent prayer I leashed when that happened, because I was amazing. I had absolutely zero ill effects from that experience. But
oh my gosh.
Yeah, but the other most amazing experience is my ghost experience. I'd mentioned you before.
Oh,
okay.
On those islands, there are a lot of ghosts.
There are a lot of ghosts. And, you know, we lived in a house that was more than a century old, and it was called La Chapelle, and it was right next to the big cathedral there. And it was a lot of fun because it was, you know, it was built from the ballast of ships. So when they first inhabited that island, when all the explorers came, they took the stones that they used for ballast in their ships to build these homes. And down at the base, the walls were like 3 feet thick. So it could be quite cool in there. And it had a very vaulted ceiling, and the bats used to fly through the ceiling because it had open vents, which was kind of a creepy experience when you're watching the bats fly through your roof. But the locals always told us the house was haunted. But we didn't really have an experience with the ghosts. But everybody there had maids. That was one thing. It was very inexpensive to have local help. But none of them would sleep in our home. And they hated to spend the night there because they said it was, you know, that there were ghosts there. And we didn't have an experience. We kept the house, actually, when we came back to the U.S., and we went back and visited when I was 17. We visited several times. So we went back when I was 17, and I slept in my same bed and everything. And it was in the middle of the night, really late at night, all of a sudden I'm dead asleep, and I get woken up because I'm a very light sleeper because someone has lifted up the sheets and is tickling my feet. So, you know, I immediately am convinced that it's one of my two sisters, which we tend to, you know, pay a lot of pranks on each other. So I do not have ticklish feet at all. I'm really lucky that way. So I laid there and I thought, okay, I'm going to let her just have a good old time, keep tickling my feet. And when I, you know, let her get real good, have a good old time, and then I'm going to sit up and scare the crud out of her. So I did that. And I laid there quite a while awake. This person's tickling away. I could feel their fingers on my feet. So I sit up, boo, and there's nobody there. Absolutely nothing. So I'm like, okay, well, maybe this person's under my bed. So I'm looking all over the place. There's nothing. So finally I lay back down. I go, okay, well, this must be the ghost. So I said some prayers and, you know, and envisioned a white light around me, a protection and everything, and no more problems. Well, of course, I did not tell my parents that time because they'd think I was nuts, right? I mean, you tell your parents, well, you know, if this happened. I thought, well, they'd think I was absolutely kooky. So it wasn't until I was 25 years old, I was having dinner back at my house with my boyfriend when I was graduated from college. Actually, I was like 22. And the subject came up, and I finally decided to tell my parents about this experience. And because I figured I can handle a little ridicule by that age, you know. So my mother turned white as a sheet.
I thought you said a ghost.
Yeah, she looked terrified. Yeah, as a ghost, right? She looked absolutely terrified. She goes, why did you not ever tell me about that experience? She was really mad. I'm like, huh? That wasn't the reaction I was expecting. I said, because, you know, you would think I was a little off my rocker. And she goes, no, that's what the locals said the ghost there did. But she never told us because she didn't want us to be scared. So what had happened was the priests used to live in that building, and one of them, and they had very large windows at the time we lived there that were pulled up by ropes. And what had happened was when he was leaning outside and talking to someone on the street below, the ropes had slipped, and the very heavy, huge window had fallen and broken his neck. So he had haunted that, yeah, isn't that awful? So he had haunted that house ever since then, and that's all he did, is he would. I'm like, well, who's going to be scared of a ghost? And again, I looked at that as a gift because there's never any doubt in my mind that we continue on after death.
Touchy-feely ghost.
Yeah, touchy-feely.
Well, I lived in Barbados for 3 months.
Oh.
In an old house. It was built in the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And there was always tricks being pulled on us.
Oh, yes.
I mean,
you mean by the locals or ghosts?
No, the ghost, whatever was in the house.
Oh, yes.
And the reason why we babysat the house was because she couldn't get any of the locals to stay there. So,
yes.
Yeah, so it was. I just think there's quite a bit of that probably on the islands. I'm not sure.
There is. And considering their voodoo practice and everything, they're very open to, you know, they don't try to hide these things or push it away or tell people they're crazy or anything. They openly talk to each other about it, and word gets around about these haunted places they want to stay away from. It's a little different than here where people are like, oh, I'm going to be ridiculed. Let's not talk about it. Let's hide this issue.
Right.
Have you gone back since?
Yes, I actually went back recently. It was a few years ago. I took my family out there. I live in Oregon now. And I flew out my two children and my husband and myself, and we just had a great time. We went in the house, and it was kind of sad because they actually just remodeled it. They had bricked up the front and lowered the ceiling and made the windows smaller and everything, and it was like a furnace in there. All the workers were in there working, so we didn't spend the night. We don't own the house anymore, or we don't, you know, rent it anymore. But yeah, we went and visited with friends there, and we just had a fabulous time, great reunion, and a lot of people there. You know, life doesn't change for them much. They go, oh, you came back home. It was wonderful.
I know there was a lot of construction going on that island when we visited. It was like they're doing a lot of changes, but probably the locals don't change.
Well, they got hit hard by the series of hurricanes,
uh-huh.
You know, about 5-6 years ago. So they've been in continuous rebuilding ever since then. And it was really sad because the cathedral next to my house was quite splendid, and the entire roof fell in. So that was a huge loss. And the Episcopal Church there, three-quarters of the roof fell in, and the Scottish Kirk where we went was completely destroyed. All they had was a little chimney standing. It was very sad.
Well, I know being on the islands, you really, at least I did, really get in touch with nature while you're there.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find that to be?
Oh, yeah. It really changes you, and it changes your relationship with your spirituality and with God. It's amazing. When you're that immersed in nature, how closely it connects you with your maker. You know, it's just that constant interaction, the feeling you get from, you know, these very old trees, and of course from the people who live there too. They have a very, very staunch spirituality overall.
Right.
So it makes a very huge difference. And versus in Oregon where it rains a lot, we spend a lot of time indoors. You know, I miss that part of it a lot. So I like to make trips out to the sun. I like to make
so
hikes here, too, when I can. Go ahead.
So you went really, actually, when you became an adult, you became in what I would call the corporate world.
Yes.
Was there a time period that you kind of didn't use your spirituality? Did you lose it at all during that corporate part of your life?
Well, I actually have been a seeker my entire adult life, and it does affect you when you get into the corporate world because it is frowned upon in the corporate world in the United States nowadays to talk about spirituality, and you really can't mention that sort of thing at work, and especially as a manager and managing teams like I have for years, you can't, you know, go talking to people about this sort of thing. It's really frowned upon. So you have to suppress a lot of that, which is very sad in a lot of ways. But throughout that, I started studying A Course in Miracles, still feeling, you know, like a seeker and kind of searching and wanting to reconnect with that sense of deep spirituality I had in the West Indies. And I just one day stumbled upon a book called A Course in Miracles, and that's one book that really influenced my thriller series that is coming out, like you said, beginning March 29th. It's actually available in the first advanced version from my website. But that very much influenced it. But again, I was seeking, felt like I was removed, felt like I was really missing something and really studying that. And, you know, as time went on, it started affecting a lot of parts of my life. I mean, I started becoming dissatisfied with where I was, with what I was doing. I was becoming dissatisfied with my job. About 10 years ago, I really hit the wall and all of that, where I was frustrated with my job. I had a decent job, but, you know, I was barely able to pay my bills. My husband and I had a little role reversal. He was staying home with the kids, and I was jealous of that. And, you know, my marriage was suffering as a result also. And, you know, pretty much everything was in chaos. I wanted more time with my friends. I mean, you name it, I wasn't too... I was kind of at a place where I was, things could have been a lot better, put it that way. And then I decided, it was funny, I'd also been studying a lot of science, a lot of quantum physics, you name it, I read it and I studied it. And I started noticing some really interesting intersections with A Course in Miracles, especially when it comes to talking about the power of forgiveness and talking about that, you know, dimensions, that we have control over dimensions and time. You know, quantum physics talks about in reality there is no time. And I thought, you know, this is really interesting how science is catching up with this very little known book. And the Course in Miracles keeps talking about the power of forgiveness to remove the blocks to love and really enable your greatness, you know, to you to realize that you're made in God's image. And I thought, you know what, I want to quit fooling around and really give it a try. So that's what I did. I decided to change my perception, to change my attitude, to change the way I looked at the world. And what I did was I started really practicing what the Course in Miracles talks about, and I started looking at everything with forgiveness, because forgiveness is all about stopping judging yourself and everyone else, because we're, I mean, most of us are always judging all the time. Well, I don't like this. I don't like that. This could be better. Whine in our head, you know?
Yeah.
And instead, I started looking at, okay, if I have a bad thought, forgive it, or someone else, and just look at them with love. It removes the blocks to love, and the and it starts enables us again to see that beautiful world that I saw in Grenada, that I saw nothing but beauty and love and realized God's presence all the time. So I started doing that. I started really practicing this intense form of forgiveness and started feeling so uplifted and so much love, and it was really weird, I have to tell you, but in 3 months, everything in my life turned around. It was the most astounding thing to me I've ever experienced, other than those miracles I talked about. But in 3 months, I had, over that span of time, I had someone approach me to come work for their organization, and I had a $60,000 a year raise, which was very nice.
Wow.
And it was like the perfect position for me, because I didn't have to travel anymore. I was traveling a lot before that. I didn't have to travel anymore, and I had small kids at the time. But I also got to manage a really great team of people and be with this wonderful company and work with some fabulous people. But I also started, my marriage turned around and how I felt about myself. And I started realizing that my issues were really self-inflicted. You know, I'm judging my husband, the situation, all of this. When I started changing my attitude, it really does change your vibration, the energy you put out into the world, which has a real transformational effect on people across a very large area, I found. I've actually been able to demonstrate that in classes I teach, too, that if when I'm doing Reiki with my hands in front of a class, I can, if people are holding like these brass divining rods, every single person's rods in the room will track the movement of my hands when I'm doing Reiki, even if they're 25 or 30 feet away. So we do have, we're emitting energy that really affects people over long distances.
Well, when you're talking about judgment, because when I think about judgment, it's judging people, but also it sounds like it's judging circumstances and situations and
oh, yeah,
than just people.
Right. Oh, yeah,
and
definitely.
Then,
mm-hmm.
And then when you change, did your husband change?
You know, I've realized how great he was already.
Pardon me?
I realized how great he was already.
Oh.
You know, because I'm sure he changed in some ways too, but then I started appreciating the wonderful things about him and started, stopped the little yammering in my mind about the things that bugged me. You know, a lot of the things, when we're bellyaching in our head, a lot of the things we're noticing are so infinitesimal and are very small compared to what's important. And when I was whining about my husband in my head, I wasn't seeing him for what a wonderful person he is, for what a loving person he was, and, you know, all the great things he did for us. I was just whining about all the things he didn't do. So, yeah, and because I was happier, yes, he was happier, and our marriage totally improved. Now that I wasn't, you know, going around being down in the mouth, judging type, negative type. I mean, I wasn't really ever a negative person, but still, when I wasn't putting out that type of energy in our house, it lightened up the whole situation, and it lightened up all the circumstances in my life. And as you mentioned, it affects circumstances, people, and people are drawn to you in ways that you can't even imagine. And there's a lot of science around that too, when it comes to, you know, the science of the human energy fields and the energy that we put out. I spent a lot of time studying.
When did you realize that you could take off and do writing?
When did I realize I could take off and do writing? It's something I've been doing for years. My mother says it's the way I let my hair down, but so to speak. But I was a writing and editing major in college, and I always loved to write, but I kind of got away from it after college. When I got into, you know, looking for work, I ended up in more in the advertising field, which wasn't a good fit with me at all, for me at all. And so then I ended up getting in sales because I always liked working with people, and that was really fun. But and I've always been a very avid reader and belonged to a lot of book groups and book clubs. And it was probably about 15 years ago I started going into work earlier, sitting out in the parking lot and writing. So I've been writing for a long time. And I started cranking out this series of novels. And these novels are based upon, you know, intersections of science and spirituality that I've learned over the years. And, of course, some of the intersections with A Course in Miracles that I found to be very, very startling. And so I put those together, and I was working with an online critique group, and they were just loving the second one that I was posting chapters from. They're going, wow, this is really great. Have you written anything else? I said, yeah, there's a first one. So then I started thinking, well, maybe the first one isn't that bad then. Maybe I should test it out. So what I did was I pulled together a group of like 25 friends that kind of cover all sorts of areas. Some like spirituality, some like it's a thriller. So some just like thrillers, some just like to read fiction. And I tested it out on them, and they all loved it. So that's how, the novels came about, the series of novels that incorporate, although it's a thriller, it's a novel, incorporates a lot of the science, a lot of the experiences from Grenada, and a lot of things that I've learned over the years. And the first one, like I said, I've been selling from my website in an advanced version before the release date, and getting some really great reviews, which is just a thrill for me like you can't imagine. I even got a fabulous review from Gary Renard, who's the best-selling author, Course in Miracles author, so which it bears on the, yeah, that's on the copy of the book.
That's really taking the pulse.
So the Great Awakening compiled of the different books you wrote? Did you put them all together for this one, or is it one of
the So this first one, so the series is called The Great Awakening. So the first one that's out, that's coming out, that's in advanced release version right now, that's publicly releasing in retail stores March 29th, that one is the first in the series, so it's just called The Great Awakening. So the next ones will have the subtitles. Yeah, so there's two more at least coming. I'm two-thirds of my way through revisions of the second one. And they just go further into, you know, all the studies. I mean, people, there's so much I found out that people don't know about how powerful they are. And that's one thing the Course in Miracles talks about, is how powerful we are. And like I said, the studies of intersections with that, especially, you know, work way back when Valerie Hunt did with the human energy fields, you know, showing that the difference in your energy fields depending upon where your mindset is. Because, for example, if you're focused on the material world, she would use an electromyograph to measure the frequencies of your energy field. And if you're focused more on the material world, your frequencies would be about 250 cycles per second, close to the body's biological frequencies. But people that are more on the level of the mystics, they would measure in about 900. And people that are really more in the avatar range would be 1600 and above. So to me, that is starting to show the verification of when we change our emotions and we change how we feel, we actually go into a different level of vibration like they talk about. And it has very far-reaching effects in all of our life.
So do you think people will use your book, The Great Awakening, in the series of books as workbooks almost?
Yeah, they can look at it as a work. It's actually, what it does is it teaches them about how their greatness, and it teaches them through a story format. Because I found people like to read stories. They like to learn through stories and have that experience. And, you know, a lot of people are reading already saying, gosh, I'm getting addicted to these characters. Is there more coming? Because it's fun. You feel like you get to know them. But, yes, it's so what it is in a story format, they get caught up in an experience with this main character, Jack Bowman, who's a scientist and a mystic. And so it's a plot. It's about a plot to gain control of his work. And his work is a formula that he's come up with and a very specific biofeedback equipment that enables him to, once the formula is injected, to actually create like a god. And so this power to be, you know, powers out there want to get hold of his studies. And then he finds out over time that the only way to control what he, you know, his new abilities that come about after he's injected this formula is when he learns the secrets encoded within A Course in Miracles. And that is how to control his energy fields, how to practice forgiveness. And, yes, so the book, what it does is it takes them through all the related science. There's a lot out there beyond what I just already mentioned. There's a lot of science about the Higgs field and other areas and how energy affects it and how they think matter is manifested. And so it takes people through all of that and why forgiveness is so powerful from a scientific view, too. So from that aspect, it's been very, very fun to write, and it's an ongoing work as far as taking people further and further into those aspects.
Now, I have the Course of Miracles book, but I have never studied with a group.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the Course of Miracles, do they, when you study with a group, or do they talk about the energy fields?
They don't talk about energy fields per se. I mean, you can talk about energy fields or anything you want to, but in the book itself, it really talks about the power of forgiveness. It talks about that we are made in God's image. You know, it talks about the Bible, and mentions that we're made in God's image, but we've forgotten that. And it talks about that we've taken on this ego that is always yapping in our head, you know, telling us how we are lacking, how little we are, getting our focus off our greatness, kind of keeping us, keeping that greatness hidden from us, and teaching us how forgiveness is for ourselves and everyone else around us is the only way to get past that. Because if I'm made in God's image, that means you are made in God's image too. And if I'm thinking you're this limited person, then I am too. So it teaches you to look at everyone and open eyes for what they truly are, and it has a very transformational effect upon your life. And for me, it's been kind of a, because of my background, I guess, in technology and all that, it's just been fascinating to follow how science is starting to draw parallels to what the Course in Miracles talks about. And as I mentioned, the Course in Miracles talks about that there are multiple dimensions. We have control over dimensions and time. You know, we have control over time, and quantum physics talks about that, you know, there really is no time. We manufacture it, that sort of thing. It's fascinating.
Lynn, when you wrote your book, The Great Awakening, what was the most fun part of it for you to put together?
The most fun part was, actually, there were two parts. The real high-speed stuff, because I love fast horses and, you know, going fast, having fun, all that kind of thing. So there's a lot of car chases. And motor, the gal who helps Jack, who's the in the novel, in the book, actually rides motorcycles. She's a motocross rider. So there are some speed chases and some things about her riding motocross and everything in the book. And so that was really fun. Yeah, so that was really fun. And then also there are three chapters in it that are set in Grenada. So so Jack, who's the mystic that I talked about in the book, he actually, after graduating from medical school, went out to visit Grenada because a friend of his kept spouting off about how fabulous it was and how spiritual, what a spiritual place it was and what a connection the locals had. And he was a real searcher in that area. And he went out to experience that connection, experience the island. And that's where he had some very transformational experiences along with a near-death experience that opened up some abilities in him that enabled him to, you know, create this formula that he comes up with and be able to use himself as a guinea pig, because he becomes quite intuitive and quite powerful in a lot of areas once he opens up to his spirituality. So that was really fun, too. And I slipped in a little piece about my ghost experience that I have happened to Jack, things like that.
Now, in the novel, they have a troubled 13-year-old niece.
Mm-hmm.
How did this work? I mean, why did you put her into the novel?
Well, I put her into the novel for two areas, to also induce a person with who was, she comes from a long line of intuitives, but someone with some real innocence, very childlike still. She grows up in Eastern Oregon, where there's a very small town. She actually lives on a ranch out there, and where she has, you know, daily interaction with nature. And I wanted to juxtapose her with Jack. And actually, when Jack starts having his experiences, when he gets wrongly imprisoned, and then he starts using himself as a guinea pig on his experience, trying to learn how to control his new abilities, he ends up affecting Jenny. They end up being connected throughout the novel. So it was very fun to kind of write that and have that connection. It was kind of a, you know, showing the alignment again that we have with each other, how we so much affect each other. Things we do can have far-reaching impacts on other people. And that's why they show that, you know, there's been prayer studies. When people pray in groups, they can really affect the amount of crime in a city. So we need to keep in mind that we can have a big influence. So that's one reason I wanted to have the connection between the two, to have that younger person and that innocence, you know, infused in the novel. And, you know, her struggles with coming from an intuitive family that was very frowned upon out in cowboy country, you know, where they don't get into that woo-woo sort of stuff, and her having to come to terms with that also, and with her own inherent powers.
Now, when you were writing the book, did the chapters just come to you? I mean, would you just, like, wake up in the middle of the night and start writing, or did it come through a different channel than normal?
Yeah, that would happen to me all the time. I would be dreaming about it. And sometimes it would wake me up all the time. I'd be dreaming about it and dreaming about the characters. So the story kind of came to me, and I sat down, and I would, as I mentioned, I'd go in and sit out in the parking lot and write, and I filled up all these notebook after notebook after notebook with writing this book that kept coming to me. And so I kept dreaming about it and having visions about it. Mostly I would see it as a movie. So I'd see this movie happening in my head. And it's funny because when people read the book, they say that's what they feel like they're experiencing it, and they feel like they're actually in the midst of a movie. And I said, well, that's because that's what I'm very visual. I saw this. I was in the midst of all the action. And there's a lot of action in this book with it being a thriller. And so I wrote all this. And then once I started typing it up, I went, oh, my goodness, this is 500 pages. This is two novels right here.
Now we've got Avatar, you know, that everybody's just in love with. Do you
yes.
see the future of the media or the new movies bringing more of this type of film in, like your book?
I hope so. I definitely hope so. Well, I think, you know, with all the upset in the country right now, there's a lot of spiritual seeking going on, a lot of spiritual awakening going on. And I think that's one reason that it might be happening, because I know when there's an upset in our energy fields, there's an upset caused around us too. And I personally feel like we're on the verge of a big breakthrough. And when you have a film like Avatar that gets into wonderful things about how connected we are, and it's got all kinds of spiritual overtones, I mean, throughout the entire movie, and, you know, the interconnectedness of nature and their interactions with nature, and there's a lot of American Indian overtones in there also. That's a beautiful thing to see, how drawn people are to that across the world. I mean, 100 years ago, they would have been saying this is the work of the devil or who knows what, you know? So yes, I think it's a beautiful thing, and that's what has surprised me about my book too, because there's a lot of similar overtones in my book, although I pull a lot more science into it. There's a lot of spiritual and mysticism overtones in my book, and the great reaction I've had from people that are just regular thriller readers has been interesting. I've had people ask me things, you know, like, what's a chakra? You know, that really don't read spiritual stuff at all, or that those kind of edgy type books, and which has been, and they loved it. So it's been it shows that people are at that point where they're ready to make that kind of connection, and it's ready to embrace it and feel drawn to that. And Avatar was wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, let's reintroduce our guest again. Her name is Lynn Pearson, and she's an author. And her book is due out hot on the press March 29th. The name of the book is The Great Awakening.
And people can buy it now from your website, right?
Yes, I was going to mention, too, my website, there's an abbreviated version if people want to check it out. It's thegreatawakeningsaga.com, but the abbreviated version is, if they just put in Google TGA Saga, SAGA.com, that's TGASaga.com, it'll take them right to the site. And if they click on Read, there's actually an audio chapter posted there now, too.
Ooh,
and
I saw that.
Yeah, so we have an audio recording. Yeah, I'm so blessed to have some fabulous talent helping me with the book. Steve Plattman has got one of the most amazing voices I've ever heard, who is Jack along with a lot of the other male characters. And then Laura Gallagher is Nell, who's that jaded foreign correspondent who helps Jack out in the book. And Laura Gallagher was a former model and actress, and she was in Chips, and she actually did some movies with Don Johnson. And she's got an amazing, incredible voice, too. And they're doing a great job.
This is on the MP3.
Yeah, it's going to be downloadable. They can listen to it on my website. And if they go to my website, they can listen to the first chapter. And then if they put in their email, they can listen to the second chapter for free. And they have a real ball.
So different people are actually reading this book as their own character.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So, oh my gosh. This
well, yeah, they're reading it. So what I'm having is Steve's reading it. So I have more than one person reading it so that, actually Laura Gallagher is the one who suggested we get a male and a female, and they have me doing some reading too because they like my voice, which is flattering.
Oh yeah, that's what I told you right off.
Yeah, thank you. So Laura suggested that we have different voices, and then it makes it much more interesting. And so it's been a lot of fun working on that project. And like I said, the book is also available right now in an advanced, special advanced release, and I do sell signed copies from my site.
I can purchase
one there. Yeah.
Excellent. I was going to ask if you sign copies. Incredible.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. When you were putting this book together, was there a surprise in it that you didn't anticipate?
Yeah, you know, there were a lot of surprises, and it was a work in progress. I mean, I learned a lot while I was writing the book, and I learned things that I hadn't previously known while I was doing research to write it. I mean, there were a lot of fun things too, because, you know, I learned a lot more about my state of Oregon, which is just an amazing place, about Eastern Oregon, the high desert, and the cowboy country out there. It's incredibly beautiful. And part of the book is set in the wine country in Oregon and the Mount Angel Abbey. That's an incredible place also. It's got a car chase through the portico of the Abbey and more about Salem. But as I went through writing the book and doing more research about ways I could draw more parallels to the power of forgiveness and why, how that affects our energy fields, I learned a lot more. I learned a lot more about some of the groundbreaking studies on the Higgs field and the work with the Higgs field and the effort to locate that and the Higgs to actually locate or prove the Higgs particle, which gives matter its mass. And, you know, work some more theories around that into my book, because it all started making sense to me and kind of coming together how our energy interacts with matter and how we bring matter into manifestation and how we heal ourselves. It started making sense instead of just becoming more of this, you know, woo-woo type stuff. I started thinking, wow, science is really catching up with this. It's starting to show how our emotions affect our energy fields, and our energy fields affect matter and can actually bring matter into being. So that's one thing I get into a lot in my book.
Yeah, it's interesting when you're writing a book how you get to a point, well, I have to research that more. I have to find out more. And then you're going out and researching. So that's what it sounds like you were really doing all through the book.
Yes, and I love doing that.
Has anybody gotten in touch with you to make a movie from your book?
Not yet, because it's not out, it hasn't been out much publicly, so I'm hoping. But
well,
no, that hasn't happened yet. We haven't really run it by anybody but like I said, pretty much everybody that's ever read it says this is a book, and there's a lot of action in it, and they especially say the final scene is totally a movie scene. I'm like, cool. Music to my ears.
So we hit the top area. Now, tell us what the least favorite part of the book was for you.
The least favorite part of the book was, I guess, the beginning part, you know, when I'm introducing Jenny and you have the family interactions and everything, when you're building the plot and before you get into the really high action part, is the least favorite part for me. I mean, because you got to build strong characters. That's one thing I'm getting a lot of feedback to. I think, boy, I can really relate to these characters. They seem so real and well-defined, because you have to introduce who they are as an individual, what their issues are, what their, you know, interspersed little things about their background, and what their pain is and what their joys are and that sort of thing. And I put Jenny in some pretty tough situations, this 13-year-old out in Eastern Oregon, and Jack in some very, very tense situations. I mean, I have things happening to him that most people would never be able to forgive, and that's what he goes through, is learning the power of actually rising above that, forgiving, and then seeing the miracle of how it transforms, you know, his
ability.
Sounds
like some of this was parallel to maybe your experiences, and you could bring it into character.
Yes, absolutely. A lot of it was. That's why I interspersed. And, you know, when you're a writer, it's funny. People are always coming to me and going, well, which one was you? And do you really believe that? And this was you, wasn't it? And you really end up putting a little bit of yourself in each one of the characters, I think, and your experiences, which is really a lot of fun. So there's a little bit of me and Jenny, because I've always been intuitive in nature, and that's why I end up teaching intuition classes with a friend of mine. And that, so I've got that incorporated in Jenny. And with Nell is very much of a daredevil, and I grew up a daredevil. I was always climbing trees, falling off buildings. You know, I got thrown 6 times by horses, you name it. I'm surprised I'm still alive. But, you know, the only thing I didn't do was, she was a motocross rider, and I always like to, I'm into horses and, you know, four-legged creatures, not motorcycles. And with Jack being a scientist, I've always loved studying science and all those intersections. So, yeah, there's a little bit of me. And I've always been a real spiritual seeker, which he goes through some real pain and agony on the spiritual seeking side. And that's been a real focus of mine my entire life.
Well, do you, with writing this book, and do you have time to teach classes now? You just mentioned teaching classes.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. What I do is I have a friend, Susan Wiley, who's kind of a renowned intuitive, and it's funny. It was kind of weird, actually. When she met me, she told me later, she says, boy, you're really intuitive. And I'm like, oh, how do you know? She goes, I can see it. Well, this is a woman that actually envisioned, before it happened, being in a plane crash at 18 and still went on this flight to Calcutta, India, and experienced a plane crash that she barely survived from. People died, obviously, on that. But as a result of that, it opened up her vision, and she can see energy fields, she can see angels, she can see all kinds of things about people. And when she met me, she said she could see that I was highly intuitive. So we became friends. We just really hit it off, and she talked me into teaching classes on intuition for people and helping them build their intuition. And to me, you know, people are always striving for, how can I hear God? How can I have this better reaction with God, or, you know, interaction with God, with spiritual life? I have found that God, your higher self, angels, whatever you want to call it, are interacting and communicating with us all the time. We don't need to strive to hear them or whatever. We just need to turn on the channel. And that's what we teach.
They'll even send messages by playing a song.
Yeah. So that's what we do, is we teach that. And, you know, I get into a lot of theories around that in my book, too. But we teach that because everybody's intuitive. They go, well, this intuitive or that intuitive, this person great intuitive. Everybody's intuitive. We just turn it off at a young age because, so, you know, it's frowned upon so much in this country. But fortunately, people are learning now that they're using their intuition, and especially if you're an entrepreneur, if you're building a business, or if you have young children and you're out somewhere, you need to keep your intuition intact just to keep them safe. But even in business,
sometimes they don't even realize that that's what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, to see the joy that comes into people's lives once they start noticing how they're being communicated to by their higher self, by their angels, by God, whatever they want to call it, and see their life transform, see more joy and happiness come in there, feel guided, listen to that communication and know, listen to that feeling in their body that they're going in the right direction. We just help them learn that, and, you know, we teach them and work with them over time. And, you know, we teach them, we have them do readings for each other, and people are shocked. It's interesting. The less you know about someone, usually the more accurate your reading is.
Right.
You know, I've given people readings. I don't even know their name, and it, like, blows them away. I mean, I try to stay away from that now because insurance companies won't cover it. And that's why we got into, you know, teaching people to leverage their own intuition. That's the most important thing anyway. Everybody's got it. Just learn to use it. You don't need anybody else to give you a reading.
Right. Have you ever dabbled in art?
You know, I love art. And you got to focus. Well, you don't have to. My oldest daughter is amazing about anything she touches. She's one of those kids that, I don't know what they call them, rainbow kids or something, I'm convinced, because everything she touches, it's just amazing. But I've been one of those types of people that have to kind of concentrate on something for it to get to, you know, evolve. So, yes, I love to paint and all that, but because I haven't focused on it, it's not one of my strong suits. But I love music. I played the flute my whole life. I don't play it as much as I used to, but I started playing it at 8 and love music. And I love to paint, but I've never been particularly gifted at it because I haven't focused on it. But love to write. That's my big thing is writing and teaching and intuition. Those are my two obsessions.
Well, it sounded to me like you used your intuitive self to write this particular.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Throughout the entire process, and it's made it so easy. You know, if you switch on your intuition, you don't have writer's block. It's like, what's writer's block? You know, just tell your intuition to give me the chapter overnight or whatever your question is, and boom, you wake up and it's like, okay, I've had a really big download. I need 3 hours.
Time for me to live this chapter.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm ready. Switch.
No, exactly.
While you were writing, was it like reading a book for the first time?
Oh, you mean while I was writing, was it like reading the book when I was writing it? Is that what you mean?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, it was really amazing. I mean, because I had a sort of a general idea what the book was going to be about, but it changed totally. It took it on its own life. I started writing this thing, and all the characters kind of took over, and it went directions that I wasn't expecting. And it was an amazing experience. And it's been, like I said, it's been learning. I've been led to study and learn more that's helped my own growth in a lot of areas. Also,
it's almost like the ghosts on the other side are helping you live this book.
Yeah, exactly.
I need to come in and give her some extra help here.
Yeah, exactly.
Funny.
And I was going to say, too, if people want to sign up to find more about our classes, we're actually going to be offering online intuitive classes, instructor-led, and people will get to give each other readings and learn how to do these intuitive skills. They can actually sign up on my website, too. If they click under classes and interactive, there's an area there where they can sign up, and they'll have access in March to a free membership level to the online website training.
Oh, good. You want to give out your website again?
Yes, it's, if they Google TGA, is short for The Great Awakening Saga, SAGA.com, TGA.com, it'll take them right to my site, thegreatawakening.com.
It's TGASaga.com.
Yes, TGASaga.com.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And there they can order a book that's signed by me with a designer bookmark, and they can listen free to 2 chapters of the book, and they can sign up for intuitive classes and a free membership level if they'd like access to videos and podcasts that are coming in March.
Good.
Well, that's fantastic.
Do we have any last message you want to give us?
My last message is you know, go easy on yourself and to readers out there, because you are great. You are powerful. And, you know, forgive yourself and forgive others and look for that love, because that's where the power is. When you look at that love, it transforms you and everyone around you.
Well, we are so lucky that we found you and you found us, however it happened.
Well, thank you. I really enjoyed today.
We enjoyed it, too.
Absolutely.
So for all our listeners, we've been talking to Lynn Pearson, the author of The Great Awakening, and her website, or you can Google T like Tom, G like George, A, saga.com. The TGA stands for the Great Awakening. So I hope that everyone has a wonderful day. And Lynn, thank you so much for being with us.
And thank you for having me.
Bye-bye now.
And bye-bye.
Bye.